Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-HQMP or 4767 for appointments. Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Monday, September 25th. I'm Ray Graff, in for Alan Shartok. Support comes from Amherst Copy and Design Works, offering printing and copying, sign making, and design services from booklets to stationery and labels to lawn signs in downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, amherstcopy.com. Joining us for Medical Monday this afternoon, Dr. Laura Scordino of Ortho New York. She is here to answer your questions about hand, elbow, and shoulder injuries. We always get a lot of calls on the Medical Monday, so get your call in now, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also email your question, voxpop@wamc.org, and we will get to as many emails as we can. Dr. Scordino, your calls, your emails, all coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call and talk show. I'm Ray Graff, in for Alan Shartok on this Medical Monday. And here today to discuss orthopedics is Dr. Laura Scordino of Ortho New York. Board certified in orthopedics, she specializes in hand, shoulder, and upper extremity surgery. Dr. Scordino has a particular interest in treatment of tendon, nerve, and arthritic conditions of the hand and wrist. She graduated from Upstate Medical University in Syracuse and completed her orthopedic surgery residency at the University of Connecticut. Dr. Scordino also has experience caring for athletes at UConn and Syracuse University and was a Division I basketball player herself. Dr. Scordino, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Roy. It's great to be back.
Nice to have you here. Our number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. And again, you can email the program, voxpop@wamc.org. We don't always get to all of the emails, but we'll do our best way to get through. And there are some open lines now, 800-348-2551. Before we start with the medical mumbo jumbo, you played ball.
I did.
How'd you like that?
It's great.
You don't seem that tall.
I'm not that tall.
Power forward?
Not quite.
No?
I'm not that tall, I'm not that fast, and I can't jump.
Well, you did okay.
Generally not the recipe you're looking for in a basketball player.
But yet, here you are on a Medical Monday, and awfully nice to have you here. So you specialize in things like carpal tunnel, I'm assuming?
Yeah. So, you know, carpal tunnel is one of the most common surgeries that a hand surgeon does. But yeah, so I take care of mainly the upper extremities, so hand, elbow, and shoulder. You know, rotator cuff problems, shoulder replacements, elbows. There's not a lot going on in the elbow, usually more tendonitis, non-surgical type treatments usually, but also some traumatic things, fractures and things like that.
I saw a friend of mine, his son had an MRI. He's been having elbow pain, mm-hmm. Baseball player.
Yep.
And the MRI finally came back and it said, you just have strained...
Yep.
Elbow, what does that mean?
Strained is, you know, typically it's the ulnar collateral ligament you're talking about in the elbow, especially in pitchers.
Yep.
And the main thing is it's a lot of overuse. And strain is just where the soft tissue is kind of stretched and, you know, overused to the point that most times we start with therapy. And therapy can be quite effective in trying to strengthen some of the other stabilizers around the elbow, some of the muscles around the elbow, to take some of the pressure off of that ligament that's strained.
These sports-related injuries, and as a Mets fan, I see an awful lot of them. Is it, to some extent, because the muscles are now too built up that the tendons can't handle it?
I guess that's one way of looking at it. I mean, your elbow sees a tremendous amount of force when you're throwing, and in the ligament in itself, the force that goes through when you are trying to throw to stabilize the elbow in itself, if you didn't have the muscles around your elbow stabilizing it, would just tear that ligament. So you really have to strengthen the muscles around the elbow in order to stabilize things.
Do you think that there is a problem with physical training now where we're building muscles, but not building those things that connect them?
Well, part of the thing with throwers that we think we need to work on is actually focusing not so much on the arm or getting those muscles strengthened, but actually focusing on the core. And so a lot of times in pitchers, we've noticed that trying to strengthen the core muscles gives your whole body a better frame and a better position in order to use the arm like you want to be using it.
Our guest today is Dr. Laura Scordino, and we welcome your calls at 800-348-2551. You've been on the program before. You know the drill. You're ready for some calls?
Let's do it.
Okay, let's go over to Javon in Hudson. Javon, you're first. Hello?
Yes.
You're on.
Yes. I'm calling from Hudson. I'm just want to ask the doctor if she could give me some answer on shoulder pain. I work for a company where I do deliveries, and I do it like 5-6 days a week sometime. And I tend to sometimes I go to sleep and I wake up with this pain in my shoulder where my old arm go numb, and it's so painful that it would wake me up out of my sleep.
So that's an interesting question that you have. You know, sometimes when we're hearing more numbness and tingling, you're actually thinking more of the nerves in the arm than the shoulder itself. So certainly one thing that I would be thinking about is carpal tunnel syndrome. That is one of the things that often wakes people up out of a night's sleep, and they have to shake out their hands and try to get the feeling back in the hands. Typically when you're thinking about carpal tunnel, you're thinking from the elbow down, or really even into just the hand or the fingers, versus if it's down the whole entire arm, you may be thinking that it may be coming more from the neck than from the wrist.
Oh, yes, because that's what happened to me. It's like the old shoulder all the way down to my finger. And so sometimes I get up and try to shake it out, but it won't go away. And then sometimes it will ease up for like 10 minutes, and then I'll feel it again. And sometimes throughout the day, like during the day, it will go and it will come, go and come. And mm-hmm. then I will not feel it for a while again for like a couple of days, and then it will happen again over and over.
Yeah, so if that's coming from your neck, then you could start either, you know, oftentimes we start with physical therapy, or even just a simple thing at night is trying to position yourself better. It could be that you're sleeping on things wrong or in a position that's kind of pinching on your nerve. If it is more of coming from the carpal tunnel, then you could try over-the-counter brace that may position your hand in a better position so that it's not putting pressure on the nerve.
All right, Javon, thank you very much for the call and getting us started here on a Medical Monday. Ray Graff in for Alan Shartok today. Our guest is Dr. Laura Scordino, and let's go over to Darren in Beacon. Darren, you're next.
Oh, yes, thank you. Yes, doctor, thank you for taking on my call. I have an issue ever since I start using an iPhone 6. I have a pain in both of my hands, inside of my thumbs, and almost the bone on the palm when I'm gripping the phone. I have decreased my usage and trying to use the phone by setting it on the table, but the pain has not gone away in a couple of months.
Okay. certainly that sounds like an overuse type injury. Again, we were just talking about carpal tunnel, but carpal tunnel is often something that bothers people when they're talking on their phone, but that would be more numbness and tingling. This type of pain that you're having where you have the pain on the front side of your thumb, that does sound more of like a tendonitis or an overuse type of problem. Is it catching at all? Does your thumb catch? Or is it just really pain?
No. No, but I think you're correct. I believe it's developed from I was utilizing my phone for work to send emails, which I stopped doing if I could. You know, I think that the actual using it for emails is what may have done it.
Sure. Yeah. And often it's a position type of thing. And so holding the phone in a poor position for a prolonged period of time can just put more stress on the tendon. So probably if you are going to be sending a long email or something that's going to take a little bit more time, it probably makes sense to sign onto a laptop or a computer for that.
All right, Darren, thank you so much for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. On this Medical Monday, 800-348-2551. Brian in Saratoga. Brian, you're on.
Hey, thanks, Ray. Dr. Scordino, hi, thank you. I had a total reconnective surgery rotator cuff early November last year. And I'll tell you why this is so concerning. I'm still having a lot of pain. And also, this is, in a sense, kind of career-threatening to me because, I mean, I'm an orchestral musician with New York City Ballet, and I'm really having such pain, you know, playing that it's only when I, you know, lay off for a week or two that, you know, things start to subside and I start feeling normal again. And I wondered, how long should I give this before, you know, I throw the towel in?
So it was November that you had it, almost a
November
year ago?
November 9th.
Yeah.
Yeah, November 9th.
I mean, shoulder surgeries take a long time to recover from, but that certainly is getting to be a long time. Usually we tell people that it may be up to a year to slowly see improvements in terms of pain, function, strength, those type of things. So you're kind of getting close to that point. I imagine you've done a fair amount of therapy. Sometimes even after surgery, if therapy, you know, has not settled things down, a steroid injection can be helpful if there's any kind of residual inflammation. Finally, if you're continuing to have pain, sometimes rotator cuffs don't completely heal. So we often, you know, if somebody has been kind of doing the usual things that do help, if you're still having pain, then we get an MRI to look at the rotator cuff again to reevaluate things.
Right. Okay. So you're saying that's good to know. I still could get a steroidal injection or you know whatever to maybe help out with pain.
Yeah. You know, it sounds like if you're quite active with the orchestra playing, and I imagine that's a fair amount of time, and maybe your arm's in a position that it's kind of flaring things up, and it seems like it is activity related, then sometimes a steroid injection can take some of that inflammation down.
That's great to know. Thank you, doctor.
Brian, thank you very much. We have to take a quick break here. Our number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Laura Scordino joins us on this Medical Monday. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Patricia Fennell, founder of AHMA, and Lee Shapiro, MD, director of the Scleroderma Center and their research teams. Now conducting the Pathways to Scleroderma Research Study, albanyhealthmanagement.com. Nathan Litauer Hospital, Gloversville, New York, introducing Dr. Joseph Popper, orthopedic surgeon arriving from Mayo Clinic, working to alleviate back pain using new methods for spine surgery, partnering with Dr. Jayin Shen, NLH.org. Watercolors by Edith, Shutesbury, Massachusetts. Edith Hunsberger, a painter in acrylic and watercolors, specializing in portrait paintings of people and pets from photographs. edith-hunsberger.artistwebsites.com. Agricultural Stewardship Association, presenting their 16th annual Landscapes for Land's Sake art exhibit October 7th through 9th in Washington County. Opening reception October 7th, noon to 5 p.m. to benefit local farmland protection. agstewardship.org. And from the Daughters of Sarah, Albany, New York, providing assisted living, rehabilitation, skilled nursing, and respite care. Friends, family, community, 518-456-7831 for tours or information.
Welcome back to Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff in for Alan Chartok. It's a Medical Monday, don't you know? 21 minutes after 2 o'clock. Our guest today is Dr. Laura Scordino of Ortho New York. And before we get back to the phones, Doc, this one came in via email from Susan, who asks, can Cubitt's tunnel syndrome cause stiff and painful tendons in the palm? What's Cubitt's tunnel syndrome? Is this a typo?
it's a slight typo. So cubital tunnel.
Oh, cubital.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's okay though. Cubital tunnel is basically what happens is the ulnar nerve, which is one of the nerves in your arm that comes around the inside of the elbow. The nerve can get pinched on in that area and then can cause some numbness and tingling down into the hands. Typically, you don't really think that it is associated with stiffness in the tendons in the hands, but it certainly can affect the muscles in the hands and the dexterity that you have in the hands if the cubital tunnel is advanced.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it could be, I'm not sure, you know, exactly the scenario that we're talking about, but, you know, certainly advanced cubital tunnel can definitely cause some difficulty with fine motor function in the hand.
Our guest today, Dr. Laura Scordino. The number is 800-348-2551. Let's go over to Jim in Matamoros. Jim, you're on.
I was wondering about pain in the ring and middle fingers of both hands, sometimes extending to the metacarpals and other fingers. That's not nonsense and no gross swelling that you can see.
Okay. Where do you feel the pain?
Well, mainly in the middle and in the ring fingers.
Yeah. So I mean, pain in the fingers. You could have the one of the most common things is arthritis, and that would be in the various joints of the fingers, at the knuckles. The other thing that is very common is something called trigger finger, where you have pain. You know, you were saying if the pain goes down towards the metacarpals, you know, that could be another thing that could cause some pain. But one of the most common things is arthritis. An X-ray would be the way to diagnose that.
Bad teeth have anything to do with it?
I'm sorry?
Bad teeth have anything to do with it?
Not usually related.
All right, Jim, thanks a lot for the call. If you live long enough, is arthritis inevitable?
It certainly becomes more and more common as you get older. You know, a lot of it just depends on, you know, what you inherited. And so if your parents had these fingers that were very bumpy and kind of all crunch down and you know, stiffness in the morning and all those things, you know, a lot of people come in and they say, you know, they're worried about getting arthritis because their parents had these type of hands. And honestly, some of it, it's not, you know, if your parents had that, it's not that you're going to, but it is something that can be inherited. So as you get older, the risk of getting arthritis is certainly higher,
but it's not definite. In other words, you might find a 95-year-old lady who does not have arthritis?
True, yeah. And even if you do have arthritis and on the x-rays, you know, the joint spaces are pretty worn down, sometimes it really doesn't bother people. So, you know, arthritis is the wearing down of the cartilage of joints, but sometimes that's not even painful. Or sometimes you see a 90-year-old person and they're here for something else, but you see their x-ray and they really have nice joints that look like a 15-year-old's.
All right, let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Laura in Niskayuna is next. Laura, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is also about my ulnar nerve. So I had an ulnar nerve transposition about 23 years ago, but I continue to have symptoms about maybe 4 or 6 weeks after the surgery, and later found out that my ulnar nerve had apparently popped back to its original position. A neurologist told me that it really wasn't changed in terms of its position. So I'm thinking it sort of tore back out of where they had put it in order to try to overcome the symptoms I was having in my hands and my little fingers. So this was on my left side, but I also have the same symptoms on the right side. And so I'm guessing that I have some kind of congenital issue where the nerve bundles are, you know, like they have a little trouble going around the elbow. And I'm wondering, is it worth it to pursue possibly getting surgeries on both arms so that I can, you know, go back to doing things like riding my bike and talking on the phone and doing arm curls and things that I can't do, pull-ups, you know, things I can't do because I can't comfortably tighten my arm past a certain angle.
So the surgery that you had on the one elbow was 20 years ago?
23 years ago,
and then within 4 to 6 weeks, your symptoms were back.
Yeah, I could feel a sort of ripping sensation in my arm, but, you know, I didn't know that that was what was happening until, a few years later when I, you know, told the neurologist, because I was still having, you know, trouble that, you know, the nerve on that arm was moved, and he said, well, it's not moved now.
Yeah.
So.
Well, the interesting thing is that, you know, at this point, they've done a lot of studies looking at the ulnar nerve because this is a pretty common problem. Carpal tunnel is one of the most common surgeries that we do, and cubital tunnel is one of the second most common nerve compression surgeries that we do. And so in the past, we would move the nerve onto the front side of the elbow with the idea being that there's less tension on the nerve. So probably over the last 5 to 10 years, there's been multiple studies that have shown that you don't necessarily have to do that. So, you know, in the right patients, if that's what's indicated, then that's still the right move. But you can also just take the pressure off of the nerve, leave it where it is behind the elbow, and still people have excellent pain relief of numbness and tingling. So, you know, that's a consideration for your other side. You know, if you've had 20 years of ongoing symptoms that really didn't get better with the first surgery, that's a little bit concerning that a second surgery would help it.
Okay, so just come back in and see if there's some other thing that you can do for it. Is that what you're saying?
Well, the surgery, I mean, it's probably surgery once again would be an option if you know, therapy and splinting and things like that don't help. But there's the surgery that you would do is a little bit different that you don't necessarily. I guess I'm also saying, you know, just because it was transposed and then may or may not have gone back, at this point, on a regular basis, I do not transpose the nerve, and that's kind of the general recommendation at this point, unless you have to.
Laura, thank you very much for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. We're joined today by Dr. Laura Scordino of Ortho New York. And let's go to Dawn in Del Mar. Dawn, you're on.
Hi. A few years ago, I had a trigger finger, and I got an injection, and everything was fine for a number of years. And then it started acting up again. So I went back just about 3 weeks ago, and I had another injection. But it still is catching a little bit, and I do have some pain. So I'm wondering, if I just need to wait a little bit longer, and two, was it possible to a third injection, and four, is surgery inevitable?
So trigger fingers are a common problem. You know, that we've done a lot of studies on trigger fingers, and the kind of general recommendation that I make to people is that you can try two different steroid injections. I don't really recommend a third injection, because at some point you start to worry that by injecting the steroid into the tendon or right around the tendon, you know, if you keep doing that, you may start to hurt the tendon. You know, typically we say that the first injection is about 70 to 80% effective, where, you know, it doesn't come back. And it's not uncommon for it to help for a long period of time and either go away, or if it does come back, I think that trying another injection makes a lot of sense. You know, I do think that you probably need to just give it a little bit more time. Usually I tell people, you know, give it up to even a month to see. Usually I tell people it's going to help with the pain before it helps with the catching. So the fact that it sounds like the pain has gotten better, although not completely, but it still occasionally catches, that's okay. And it just needs some more time to work. And the idea is that it needs to just let the inflammation go down a bit more.
Explain to me what this trigger finger is and how it catches.
Sure. So you have tendons on the front side of your finger.
Your index finger. It
doesn't matter any, but they just call it a trigger finger probably because of that. So there's tendons on the front side of your finger. They attach to the end of the finger. And when you try to flex your fingers, those tendons go underneath a pulley. It's kind of like on a fishing rod. You know, they have the different eyelets that hold the string on the fishing rod. It's the same idea of the tendons and the finger. And so the tendon normally slides back and forth underneath the pulley. But if for some reason it's gotten swollen, either from a lot of use or, you know, many times it's more common in diabetes, but other than those type of things, we don't really have a you know, always a cause. But so as that gets more swollen, that may catch on that pulley. And then actually, you know, people can wake up in the morning and they open up their fingers, but one of them stuck down.
Really?
Yep.
I've never heard of such a thing. Interesting. Now, tendons, can you replace? You hear about Tommy John surgery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, any baseball fan has heard Tommy John over and over and over again. So they are really replacing ligaments with those from cadavers?
So, I mean, you can use cadavers, and sometimes that's what we do, but we often take a tendon from the patient, an extra tendon. So you have a bunch of, you know, tendons throughout your body, and some of them are extra tendons that, you know, 10% of the people don't even have, so it's not something they absolutely need, and you use that tendon and you reconstruct that ligament, the ulnar collateral ligament in the Tommy John surgery.
So at the time Tommy John had that in the 70s,
mm-hmm.
it was pretty radical.
Mm-hmm.
And where have we come? What is the state of the art now? Have we made a lot of advances in the last 30 years?
Yeah, you know, there's always changes in terms of rehab, you know, after surgery, certainly rehab and therapy before surgery to try to avoid surgery. And then in the techniques in terms of, you know, the different ways of putting the tendon back in, you know, before maybe you'd use more of bone tunnels where you'd actually make holes in the bone, wrap it around there and then tie it to itself or suture it to itself. And now there's various anchors that you can put in, and those anchors hold that tendon into the bone in place. So that's probably one of the biggest changes is the use of anchors.
Dr. Laura Scordino is our guest today on this Medical Monday. Ray Graff in for Alan Shartok, 800-348-2551, the telephone number. Let's go to Kim in Germantown. Hi, Kim.
Good afternoon. My question is about finger joint replacement. I had one done a number of years ago, and I've got a silicone joint in there. When are they going to do a nice ball and joint like they have for the hip and the knee?
So that's a good question. Finger joint replacements are something that, you know, the orthopedic community or the hand community as a whole are trying to make better. At this point, like you said, you know, the silicone ones can wear out with time, and they don't have the reproducible results in terms of function and range of motion that knees and hips typically create. You know, there are some joint replacements that we have in the PIP joint, or one of the joints of the finger, and the MP joints that are kind of a ball and socket type of joint, but you need to have good soft tissues around those within the joint in order to stabilize things.
Okay. Now, this was done because of RA,
correct,
and the pain is gone, but the range of motion,
right,
is not good,
yep,
and there's nothing I can do about that because the silicone just doesn't bend.
That's right.
Completely.
And so, you know, we talked about arthritis as you get older, and is it inevitable? You know, I see a lot of people with finger arthritis, and usually, you know, people, when they ask, you know, is there a joint replacement? I say there is, but typically you really don't want it unless, like you said, you know, you have rheumatoid arthritis, and the main indication is for pain relief. And so the fact that it's helping you with your pain is great, you know, but typically what I tell people is that you're probably not going to see the motion that you're, you know, hoping to see in terms of the normal motion that you may have on a finger that's unaffected.
Right, but they're not doing any research on getting something that will bend completely then.
I'm sure there's research being done on it, but it's just not, you know, we're just not at that level yet.
Kim, thank you for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Liz in Amherst. Liz, you're next.
Hello. I am calling with a question about a 31-year-old athlete who he's an ultimate frisbee player, and he's really pretty careful about his training exercises and has a lot of core strength and does a lot of great body care work. And he is also a carpenter, and he's right-handed, and he has just recently was sharing with me kind of help trying to find out what to do about this problem in his left arm, and he is right-handed. So it's his left arm. He dislocated his shoulder twice sometime over the, you know, past 5 years. He also dislocated his ring finger on the left hand as well. And he also, about 3 years ago, had a broken wrist during a game, which he has now a metal plate in the inside-facing portion of his wrist and to get that fixed. And currently, he has developed this pain, a dull ache in his arm, near his elbow, that he describes more like when you get a shot, you know, you have this dull ache somewhere in the whole arm. And occasionally he's been waking up with tingling in his fingers at night. He wakes up in the morning and they're tingly, and then it kind of goes away, but sometimes it seems to be getting worse at night. Those are his two main concerns. It's like the tingling and then the dull ache. And then, out of nowhere, from no impact, he developed this huge bruise on his shoulder, on his elbow, and he does not remember ever banging it. So his primary care physician sent him to a hand doctor, and I was telling him he should get an X-ray, and I'm wondering what you think.
You know, as far as the bruise showing up, you know, if there was any kind of trauma, then I think it makes sense to get an x-ray. As far as the numbness and tingling going down into the hands, you know, once again, when I hear numbness and tingling, I'm thinking about a nerve. And, you know, there are three main spots that can get pinched on. One is coming out of the neck. The other is at the elbow, and that would be cubital tunnel like we've been talking about. And then the other is carpal tunnel into the hand. So part of it depends on which of his fingers are going numb in terms of, is it the cubital tunnel or is it carpal tunnel? And if it's mainly, you know, when he's waking up in the morning, it could certainly be a positional thing. So trying to either keep the arm out straight can help if it is cubital tunnel. Mm-hmm. And if it's more carpal tunnel, then wearing a brace at night can help. The other thing, as far as the pain goes, the dull, achy pain, one of the most common reasons that I see people for elbow pain is for something called tennis elbow. And so whether you're playing tennis or not, it's a tendonitis. And that is usually on the outside of the elbow. And, you know, so, you know, as far as playing frisbee golf, you know, I don't know exactly the details of frisbee golf, but I know from throwing a frisbee that stretches that area. And, you know, that could certainly be something that's contributing to his pain.
All right. Well, thank you, Liz. We appreciate it. Are there people who are more prone to dislocating shoulders, whatever?
Yeah. You know, shoulder dislocations often happen because of trauma. So people who are playing sports and getting tackled or those type of things, you know, have a higher chance of dislocating. And then some people just have lax joints. So you've heard of people being double jointed.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they're just at more risk of it because of the fact that their soft tissues are not really as tight or stiff as other people. So there's a little bit more laxity, or, you know, the shoulder can kind of go in ways that it typically doesn't for other people. And then it's more at risk of just kind of popping out of place.
Now, I've seen knee dislocations and shoulder dislocations. You always hear about, oh, we'll just pop it back in. Mm-hmm. Is that, in fact, possible?
To pop it back in?
Yeah. And everything's fine?
So some people are able to pop it back in. You know, you're playing basketball and you dislocate your shoulder, and some people just, you know, either themselves can pop it back in, or somebody on the field is a trainer or something and they can pop it back in, certainly. Sometimes, you know, oftentimes if you have a true dislocation of the shoulder, people end up in the emergency room and then are really getting it reduced. And oftentimes that, for us as doctors, kind of tells us, you know, was it dislocated or was it something called subluxated? When it's subluxated, that's where it feels like it's out of joint and it's close to out of joint, but not quite completely.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, when you're in the emergency room, you have an x-ray, the shoulder's out of place, and then they put it back into place, it's pretty clear that it was, yes, truly dislocated. You know, and then kind of how that goes in terms of, is it going to be fine or is it going to keep dislocating? A lot of that depends on a patient's age. And so usually younger people have a lot higher of a risk of re-dislocations.
Why?
Probably because of the laxity, like we had talked about. One, because of the fact that everything's a little bit more loose. You know, as you get older, everything's a little bit more stiff.
Yeah.
One. And then two, they're probably going to be going back out onto the football field and getting tackled again. And
right. If a 50-year-old dislocates, he probably ends his career
and
sits on the couch.
That's enough of that game. Yeah.
All right, let's take a break. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Dr. Laura Scardino is our guest, and we will be right back with the home stretch of this very fast-paced program in a moment.
Support for WAMC comes from Villa Veritas Foundation Kerhonkson, New York, helping fight the epidemic opioid crisis both locally and throughout the country, with specialized programs, education, and support for men, women, and families. VillaVeritas.org for inquiries. Ellis Medicine, 4 campuses, Ellis Hospital, McClellan Street Health Center, Bellevue Women's Center, and Medical Center of Clifton Park. With more than 400 beds and 700 medical staff, EllisMedicine.org. Ichiban Japanese and Chinese Restaurant, Central Avenue, Albany. Japanese, Chinese, and sushi bar. Dinner entrees served with soup, salad, and shrimp appetizers. Delivery to Greater Albany area, including Guilderland. 518-432-0358. The Preservation League of New York State Albany, partnering in preserving historic New York through advocacy, education, grants, and loans. So our past has a future, preservenys.org. And from Culligan Water of the Northeast for over 80 years, providing pure drinking water as well as options for problem water at home and at work, culligannortheast.com.
Welcome back to the program. It's Medical Monday. Ray Graff in for Alan Chartok, 2:42 on a Monday afternoon with Dr. Laura Scordino of Ortho New York. And we'll take one quick email here, and then we'll get back to the phones. The lines are loaded. This one's from Russell, who writes, I had a mallet finger fracture in my pinky, which was splinted. When I went back to the doctor 5 weeks later, x-rays showed no healing, and splint had not been hyperextending enough. Isn't it important to check x-rays that the splint is correct before over a month has passed? Finger has healed now after 2 more months in a new splint. And that's from a very irritated Russell, clearly.
Well, mallet fingers are a pretty common injury. Often they happen when a ball hits the finger and then forces the finger to flex down. And you can either have a bony mallet, which it sounds like you have, where there's a piece of the bone that attaches to the tendon, or just the tendon injury. But regardless, usually we do treat this in a splint for about 8 weeks all the time, and then after that you start to kind of wean out of the splint. You know, in terms of when you get an x-ray, it's not uncommon to wait, you know, 3 to 4 weeks to get an x-ray. It kind of, you know, part of it, it's hard for me to tell you exactly how often to get x-rays. I mean, part of it depends on exactly the position of the break or how big of a piece the break is. If it's a large portion of the bone, then sometimes you do need to have surgery for it, or you need to make sure that things aren't moving how they shouldn't be moving. But if it's a small, very small piece, then sometimes, you know, you don't necessarily get x-rays all that often.
All right, doctor, let's go back to the phones. Chuck in Hudson's been waiting quite a while. Chuck, you're on.
How you doing?
Good.
I have a finger that I broke last year, and I never went to have a brace on it. The last finger, the pinky, and it's bent over.
Okay.
So,
I can't straighten it out.
Okay. At what part of your finger is it broken? Do you know?
It was broken.
What part of your finger, Chuck?
Like the very last knuckle or?
The last finger.
Yeah. You know, so we were saying that mallet fingers are pretty common. This probably sounds like you may have had what's called a mallet finger. At this point, a year out, there's probably not a whole lot that can be done. You know, if it's very painful, then it probably makes sense to
it's
have
it. It's not painful.
It's not painful. So at this point, not seeing your finger or x-rays, it's hard for me to exactly tell you if something can be done or not. But oftentimes a year later, if it's stiff or it isn't straightening out, oftentimes it's hard to kind of come back from that. But if it is something called a mallet finger, it's not uncommon for those to heal in a little bit of flexion where you can't totally straighten it out.
Okay, thanks, Chuck. If it was really painful, would you just re-break it?
Well, sometimes you do re-break it and kind of put things into the right position and then try to fix it that way. Or other times, if it's a problem through that joint, then you can do what's called a fusion. And that's, you know, kind of where you get those two bones that are moving and rubbing on each other and causing pain. You try to get those two to heal to each other so it's not hurting.
Dr. Laura Scordino is our guest today on this Medical Monday. And we go to Victor in Geneva, New York. Victor, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you, Laura. So I've been having just issues with my elbow. I'm going to give you a little background on this. Tuesday night, went to bed, was completely fine, 100%. Woke up Wednesday morning, and my left elbow was completely swollen, really tight, completely red around the outside, about 6 inches in diameter around. The swelling has gone down a little bit, but still very painful. And now I'm feeling a lot of soreness in my shoulder and around my wrist, and I've gotten a lot more headaches over the last 2 nights as well. Just wondering what's going on and what this is. I haven't been checked in yet. I haven't gone to the doctors yet, but starting to be concerned, and I know I should certainly go in, but I'm just driving home right now and thought I would call.
Okay.
So, I do think that it makes sense to go to the doctors to get it checked out. I mean, certainly when you wake up and have a lot of redness and swelling and pain, you're worried about infection. It sounds like that's gotten better to some degree, but then if it's, you know, now it's in your wrist and your shoulder, you know, you want to make sure that you don't have one, an infection. Lyme disease also presents in very strange ways. You know, I don't know if, which, you know, in terms of joint pain, you could probably have had some type of, you know, typically you think with Lyme disease that you'd see that bullet lesion, skin lesion. But when you have a variety of kind of migrating joint problems, that's often something that you want to get checked out, especially just the elbow in general, the description of it being red and swollen. It sounds like concerns for an infection.
All right, Victor, thanks a lot for the call. Our guest is Dr. Laura Scordino. And let's go over to Margie in Poughkeepsie. Hello, Margie.
Hi, how are you?
Good, you're on.
So I was calling because I have a lot of pain and loss of strength in my hands. I have a lot of pain radiating from my elbow all the way up into my wrist, and it's recently become a problem because I'll be working and have a 60-pound object in my hand and I'll drop it. I've had X-rays done and EMGs done, and they all come back normal. My doctor says that it is most likely cubital tunnel, and he just had me do an EMG to make sure there's nothing wrong in my neck, because he says really the only thing for cubital tunnel to fix it is surgery. I was wondering if there's sort of anything that I could do tonight. I'm only 22, so I'd like to avoid surgery as much as possible. But I was wondering if there was anything else that I could do to help with the pain and the loss of strength.
Have you done any therapy for it?
Yeah, I did about 6 to 8 weeks. I think closer to 8 weeks of therapy for it.
Okay. You know, I think it makes sense to look at the neck because sometimes, you know, you think it's coming from the elbow, but truly it is coming from the neck. So I think that that's a good good spot to start, certainly. You know, there's various braces that you can try to wear if the symptoms are more at night to try to keep your elbow out straight and it is cubital tunnel. You know, it's sometimes you do have cubital tunnel and it doesn't show up on the EMG, but you want to be pretty careful and, you know, going ahead with surgery if it's, unless the symptoms completely, you know, make sense for a cubital tunnel and you've looked into all the other things. So I think it is good that they got the MRI of your neck.
Yep.
Okay, Margie, thank you so much for the call. It's Medical Monday, and let's go over to line 5 and Michael in Brimfield, Mass. Michael, you're on.
Yes, hi, doctor. I have, I had an MRI and I was diagnosed with a torn rotator cuff and also some bone spur issues. And I've been receiving cortisone shots for them. And I heard that if I have too many cortisone shots, that surgery may be out of the question in the future.
Is that true?
Well, you do want to start, you know, you basically don't want to do too many steroid injections. The idea being that if you do a steroid injection, it could weaken the soft tissue around the injection if you do too many of them. So, you know, depending on, there's a variety of rotator cuff tears. And so if you have a partial tear of the rotator cuff, then there's a little bit less of a rush to kind of intervene if you needed to surgically. If it's a full thickness rotator cuff tear, then that's when you worry a little bit more that there's a chance that that rotator cuff could start to pull back and surgery would be more challenging to fix the rotator cuff or have it heal well. So, you know, I think intermittently, if you had a few steroid injections to try to settle down the pain, if it's a partial thickness tear and potentially avoid surgery, I don't think that that's unreasonable. You know, I think that the whole point of doing too
I've
many...
I've had about 4 cortisone shots over the course of the last year, and it's mostly just for pain.
Okay. So, I mean, that's a fair number of steroid injections. You know, at some point, you got to think if the steroid injections are helping, one, or two, you know, how painful is it? And at some point, you know, do you want to do surgery to intervene if necessary?
Are you just postponing with cortisone shots?
So sometimes cortisone shots can be really helpful and can help you avoid surgery. And so, you know, a lot of that is if the problem is more inflammation or a partial tear where there's a lot of pain and inflammation in the area because you've got this small partial tear, and then the steroid injection can take down some of that inflammation and allow you to get into therapy and strengthen things. You know, bursitis is a very common problem, or impingement, they're the same term, mm-hmm. and that's just a lot of inflammation around the shoulder, and the idea of the steroid injection is to take that down.
But once you have a rotator cuff tear, say it's a slight tear, can it heal itself? Or is it once it's torn, it's torn?
So that's an interesting question. You know, if it's a partial tear, the idea is that your body can repair it to some degree, and it's probably not 100% normal rotator cuff tissue, but there is kind of like good scar tissue in a way, in that, you know, it's still attached and you're still able to do the things that you want to do. If it is completely torn and it is a full thickness tear, then that's different. That's kind of like there's a rope that's tied to something and now it's completely not attached and the rope is just kind of flopping in the breeze. It's not attached. And so that is not going to fix itself.
And you can reattach.
Correct. Yeah, with surgery, you know, you go in, you take the rotator cuff and you put it back down to where it's supposed to be, put sutures around there and an anchor in there to kind of put that back down to where it's supposed to be, with the idea being that in time that's going to heal back down.
To full strength?
So that's a good question. The main indication for surgery is to help with the pain. And strength is something that we, you know, obviously work towards getting as best strength as you can. But it takes a while. You know, rotator cuff surgery, usually I tell people it's a good 3 to 6 months to heal and a good full 1 year to fully see, you know, the strength and the motion that you're going to get out of it.
Dr. Laura Scordino is our guest today. And we go over to Rick in Wendell, Massachusetts. Rick, you're on.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I have a non-trauma injury to my elbow. Coming back from Florida, hours in the car, leaning on it most likely. It swelled up. It's about the size of a half of a tennis ball. I had it drained with a steroid shot. He sent the fluid out, and he came back and said I had pseudo-gout, and there really isn't a whole lot to do for it. They don't particularly think about draining it again, and it doesn't respond to, like, ice and anti-inflammatories like ibuprofen. Do you have any ideas what?
Pseudo-gout. Pseudo-gout. What is that?
So pseudo-gout is, often a more of a medical problem where your body kind of, it collects crystals within the joint. And so that in itself causes pain because your body, you know, it's an inflammatory process. So gout and pseudo-gout, it's called pseudo-gout because it's like gout. The crystals are just slightly different when you look at them underneath a microscope.
I see.
So, you know, it's possible. It sounds, the way that you're describing this, it sounds like something called olecranon bursitis, where the area over your elbow gets big, like you said, like the size of a tennis ball. It's often not that painful for people, but the swelling is annoying to people for certain. Oftentimes when you drain it, it comes right back. So typically, the thing that I recommend is a compressive wrap, and unfortunately, just giving it time. The good news is that the vast majority of the time, your body slowly resorbs this fluid and kind of takes it back, and that swelling does go down. And you want to be hesitant to rush into surgery in the elbow to take that swelling away, because if there's an infection in that wound, where if you took the bursa out, there's not a lot of skin in that area, and so sometimes people end up needing skin grafts and you know, flaps and different things that you don't really want to go down if you don't have to. If you can just, like I said, try the compressive wrap and really be patient with it. That's for olecranon bursitis. Pseudo-gout is a little bit different. That's in the joint itself. But what you're describing sounds like olecranon bursitis, and it's possible that that fluid just has some crystals in it.
Rick, thanks a lot for the call. Let's quickly go over to John in Albany. John, you got about a minute here there, Chief.
I'm 65. I got pain in the base of my thumb. It might actually be one of my wrist bones. But when I get pain when I try to fold it across my palm to touch my other fingers. Now, I used to do light demolition and reconstruction of older buildings when I was young and used a lot of non-power hand tools. But I've also had a handful of falls on my bike where I caught myself on the heels of my hands, rather than drive my shoulder into the ground. I was wondering if you have any idea what that might be.
It's probably arthritis. X-rays will be the definitive way to know that for sure. But base of thumb pain is often arthritis, and believe it or not, that's the most common spot to get arthritis in the hand. It's slightly more it's more common in women than men, but certainly men get it as well. But typically, people complain of pain right at the base of the thumb, right where you're describing it. Pain when you're trying to grip things or open jars. It's a really common problem. So usually we start with some steroid injections. There's braces, and there's a great surgery that takes a while to recover from, but is very helpful in terms of pain relief if you get to that point. But usually starting conservatively is the way to go.
All right. When this started, the pain used to be severe to the point where my thumb would just seize up, and I moved it a little bit. I'd hear an audible snap. And
John, we're almost out of time.
Away immediately,
go ahead, Doug.
And then I can use it.
We're almost out of time, John.
Sure. So, you know, sometimes the arthritis pain is very painful initially, and some of it kind of wears out with time. The other thing is that you may have been describing a trigger thumb there where you feel that snap. So if you're feeling catching in the thumb and it's snapping back and forth, then that may be the trigger thumb along with some arthritis at the base of the thumb.
Well, Dr. Laura Scordino, that's it for the program. Fast-paced show. How do we find out more about Ortho New York?
You could go on the website, orthonewyork.com. That's probably the best way to do it.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. Support for this program comes from New York Oncology Hematology, offices in Albany, Amsterdam, Clifton Park, Hudson, Rexford, and Troy, with a team of 31 physicians, world-class cancer care, close to home, newyorkoncology.com. Thanks again to Dr. Laura Scordino for being with us today. Thanks to you for the great calls. Sorry we didn't get to everybody. The lines were loaded from minute one. We do what we can. Thanks to our engineer, back from vacation, Zach Malloy, looking rested. Well done, sir. Thanks to Joe Makowicz for answering the phones. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff, in for Alan Shartok. Thanks for being with us today. Stand by now for news.